Mr. Black, real nine. How did you feel about coming north and doing this infantry training?
Well, we thought it was, great sort of coming back up here. As it turned out, we didn't get much time at home while we were up here. I think we had 3 weekend leaves the whole time we were at Halt Whistle training camp.
What was the camp like?
Well, shall I say that it had been an Italian prisoner of war camp, and the Italians, prisoners of war, had protested so much about the condition that they took them out of the camp and gave them better places somewhere else, and immediately put us in for the infantry training. It was damp, of course. It was January, and the weather was. Well, it was raining. We didn't have a lot of snow or anything, but certainly plenty of rain. We're out on the moors above Halt Whistle at Fellerson Castle, which is literally in the wilds of the Wannies. The camp itself, all the time we're there, I never felt dry and warm. There was dampness the whole time. The accommodation, to say the least, was Spartan. It was typical. I wouldn't say it's typical prisoner, because I think we looked after our prisoners of war better than they did us. But it was 40-year bunks in the Nissen huts, and that applied to everybody, sergeant majors straight through sergeants and NCOs, the gunners themselves. The officers were a little bit better off, but not much. You came in from a day's training soaked. You had a stove for to try to dry your gear off. Your socks were soaked, your feet were soaked, you were cold. It was really tough going. I think even more so than today, because I think when they do the training of that type of day, at least they come home. I'll come back to the barracks, and the barracks are reasonably warm and dry. But we spent 6 weeks like that. I can't remember a fine day in all that time.
And where were the ablutions in relation to
you? Oh, well, you had the Nissen huts, which were that had been converted into ablutions, but again, very basic, just the wash basins. There was a type of shower.
Cookhouse?
Oh, yes, the cookhouse. I mean, they had all the facilities of a camp.
Was it a large camp?
Oh, yes, yes. Well, the whole regiment was there. You had over 1,000 men there, so it was a fairly big camp.
You hadn't brought your guns with you, had you?
No, the guns were left down at Southborough.
And what form did the training take?
Well, first of all, it was it was a test of your fitness. We did. We started off with 2 or 3 mile route marches on what roads there were around there. Then that developed into cross country route marches, and again that developed into a sort of power march where you had to cover 10 miles in full pack with your rifle. And in the case of each troop, a Bren gun. So you had to everyone had to sort of carry their own gear, and then they had to give assistance to literally the man with the Bren, because the Bren gun and ammunition had to be carried along as well. And you had to do that 10 miles in 2 hours. And not long roads. I mean, you're over hills and down dales doing it. I don't think there's more these days of the troops than that. It got very, very frustrating at times that you had the instructors sort of urging you on, as you see them nowadays. But, on this occasion, we had a brigadier watching us after we'd finished this 10-mile power barge, and one of our sergeants was so absolutely fed up with the conditions and everything, and this that the brigadier when we finished, well done that man for the brand. It happened to be the sergeant's turn for to carry the brand. He says, you know what you can do with your brand. The brigadier, to give me credit, he knew what they were going through, and he just sort of he smiled, and he got a rollicking from the OC after that.
And this would be in rain and whatever the weather was.
Oh yes.
How do you keep yourself dry?
Well, we didn't. Literally, we didn't.
Do you have some form of cape cover?
Do you mean with your? Oh yes, you had your great coat, and you also had your. Well, then it was your gas cape that you carried with you. But of course, even in, you know, when you're wet, you with a gas cape, you're glad to take it off because you're so hot if you're running around with all this gear on.
How did you stand up to it? Because you hadn't had this life to such a harsh degree.
I think they stood up to it pretty well. I mean, physically, I think everybody was all right, but morally, it began to wear that. Oh, another day like this.
Did you have any men who collapsed?
We had one or two where they had to have the medics out and treat them. We had one chap that he got so fed up he threw himself from the bridge into the river. Fortunately, he wasn't seriously hurt.
He would have to be removed though from the.
Oh yes, he was taken away into hospital.
Where were these instructors coming from?
Well, they were from infantry regiments, plus some of our own who had done a pre-infantry training course. But as most of the senior instructors were from infantry regiments, and they really put you through it. One of the things was that. Crossing these Dunart wires, you know, the coils of Dunart wire, they used to put them in threes, and one of the ways to get across, they made everyone do it, was that someone had to go and put his back to the wire and lie across the coil, so he pressed them down, and the others literally stepped across his body, jumping on him to get across. And the last one, or the last two, had to take him by the legs and sort of pull him back off the wire. We had an officer who used to... He threw himself into this with great gusto. He was a local officer. I mean, when I became Sergeant Major, he became my battery commander in Palestine. It was Tiny Marriott. He was a big fella. I got on marvellously well with him. And he used to fling himself down while he was such a book. It took a hell of a job to get it to pull him back off the wire. There was barbs sticking into him all over. He never complained about it. So, I mean, the officers, to their credit, took as much as the lads did.
And the barbs would... presumably get through the uniform into the skin.
Well, they could do. I mean, you had a backpack on, you had web equipment on, you had probably a thick, at that particular time, you'd have your thick greatcoat on. They didn't penetrate very far. We never had to use this tactic, but, I mean, it was there. You were trained for it.
And of course, did you have bayonet training, bayonet practice?
Oh, yeah, had bayonet practice. And
what form did that take?
Well, the old straw dummies, what have you. The shout as you went in, and then the business of when you put the bayonet in and you couldn't get it out, you always had one up the spout and you fired that to bring it out. And the other one was bringing the bayonet out and somebody else attacked and you put it on with the butt of the rifle and all theory. And I never saw a bayonet used once. Don't think they were used very much, but they're a horrific thing when you think about it.
It was unarmed combat part of the
unarmed training. Combat, a little of unarmed combat. you didn't go into that sort of too deeply on the infantry train. I think it was more for for your fitness to get really to get them really accomplished in this sort of work. We used to one of the favourite things the instructor was to used to have to crawl through these huge land drains, the big drain pipes, supposedly to take an enemy position, what have you. And of course, you'd get in there, and in their wisdom, they'd throw a thunder flash in. Well, you could imagine these big army battle thunder flashes echoing through there. Your ears were ringing for days after. We did a bit of live ammunition training where the Bren gun was fixed and at a fixed point, and it was sort of coming over your heads, not very far over.
Were there any accidents again? Is anyone hurt?
I don't remember anyone being beat apart from the sort of sprained ankle or sprained wrist where they'd fallen, or grazes and bruises. There's plenty of those, but not. I don't remember a serious accident there.
Did you fire your weapons on a range?
No, we didn't we didn't fire on a range there. As I say, there was the training with the live ammunition that to give you the experience of bullets going above your head. But we weren't actually firing at targets. They were on a fixed target. Obviously, they couldn't wave them all over the place with
assault course. Was that
there? The assault course was the main part of the thing, using scrambling nets and swinging across the river on ropes, virtually the same as the Marines and Commandos do today. Carrying big logs to cross a river and this sort of thing.
Digging in, was that part of your training?
The what?
Digging in, slit trenches.
Oh yes, you did. You did a fair bit of that. And that came in useful.
And any other form of training that they gave you whilst you were there?
Well, it was just again. You had your gas training. You had map reading training. You had sort of movement by night on compass bearings and this sort of thing, night manoeuvres, picking up rendezvous points or from maps and this sort of business.
How long did this training last?
Well, we're there about 5 weeks, and as I say, in that time we had three weekends from the Friday night until the Sunday night were allowed to, and most of the chaps sort of lived up in this area. There's still quite a lot of the original TA, and we used to get the train down from Haltwhistle down to Newcastle and then go home. But we so keen to get away, we used to come out in the clothes that we'd been training in and get the train. Hilda met me at the station a couple of times. And she said, what a bunch of ragtags came. They were literally covered with mud, but were keen to get home. Our socks were still soaked. That was one of the first things she used to do, was wash all my socks and my shirt and underclothes and things like that. But at one time, they had the barrier up at Newcastle Station, and for some reason they hadn't unlocked it for the train coming. And they were so keen to get, they literally pushed the barrier aside, a big steel grid barrier.
It must have been difficult to keep clean.
It was. I mean, you could do the sort of basic cleanliness. You had to have a shave every morning. I mean, that was it. And as I say, there was showers that, if you could stand it, because they were never very warm. And I mean, a January day, you'd been out, and you didn't feel like going into a cold shower too often. The best you could do was have a good wash down.
And did they expect you to start the day with clean and...
Oh, they didn't expect you to be sort of buttons polished and brasses polished. And I mean, you were in denim fatigues, I mean, which don't lend themselves to spit and polish anyhow.
And you were there, I think, say 5 or 6 weeks?
Oh, 5 weeks.
You must have been pretty fit, though, by the end of it all.
We were. I was pretty sick. Well, we're very sick. We're glad to get away, to get home to literally civilization. For all we're in our own part of the country, we're glad to leave it.
And where did you go to next?
Well, we went back to our where we're concentrated at Great Bounds Camp at Southbrook, which is near Tunbridge Wells. We picked up our guns and got back to sort of normal training.
And what were you doing at Tunbridge Wells?
Well, after we went back to Tunbridge Wells, we're sent out again onto the south coast on AA defence. I mean, again, nothing really much happened. We did move for a while to Lay-on-Sea. Again, this was for mobile training on the Beaufort. We did training in the Essex area, very much the same as we'd done down at Eastleigh, just sighting the guns and generally just, as I say, the mobile training that we'd done for some time. It was training.
Did you find it boring, this repetition?
Well, no, not really. I mean, there was always something new happening. I mean, you weren't, say, training in the same area. Each day you were at a different part of the country. And I personally found that very interesting, seeing all the various little villages around, which I probably would never ever seen in my life. And I mean, the places where I go down that way now, it's, oh, yes, I did mobile training. My daughter, see, I've been, oh, says, yes, I was there. I was doing mobile training there. We did quite a lot of that. And at Lee, we did quite a bit of troop movement training. That was sort of moving as a battery, moving as a regiment. That was to give the movement control of the army. It was generally the engineers who had charge of movement control, to give them experience of moving the regiment. And then, of course, that was a bit boring, because you could spend hours just waiting for instructions to do such and such a thing. You weren't doing anything on your own. You were definitely under orders. Again, that was leading up, of course, to the invasion, where everything had to move down to the south coast, and everything had to be organised.
Had there been a change in command in the regiment at this point in time?
We still had the same colonel. Colonel Iliffe was still with us for a while down at Southborough, and then we changed the establishment. And now, who was the colonel that came? Oh, Colonel MacFaithful.
What was he like?
He was. He was a regular army officer. He eventually became a brigadier. Very good, very fair, good disciplinarian. He wanted things done, and he got things done. He sort of, well, he did at Salisbury, he did sort of lick the regiment into shape, because by then we'd been put under command of 12th Corps. We were the Light Attack Regiment of the 12th Corps, who were scheduled for the invasion, of course.
And at this point in time, did you know this was the situation? Did you know that you were in a corps that was to be part of the invasion?
Oh, yes. I mean, well, you could see the build-up round about you even then. I mean, you were now, what, in 1943, you're in May, July 1943, and even then, you could see the build-up. I mean, we saw the Americans with all their trucks at various parts. Then our trucks began to have the white star painted on the roofs. You knew that there was... well, I mean, you'd been blind if you hadn't noticed that there was something coming off.
Had you made any contact with Americans?
The only contact we made with the Americans was when we went along to... and where was it?
Is it a bit ahead of what we're talking? Is it?
It's a little bit ahead, really.
I was going to ask you really how you found them.
Well, I must say that we never got a chance in this country of really meeting up with them to make an assessment of them, as it were. We met the odd ones when we were on leave and this, and found them perfectly all right. I don't think there was the animosity that people said amongst them. The only thing that grieved us was the fact that they had much better facilities. I mean, when you heard about when you went onto a site where the Americans were and you learned that they had ice cream freezers and this sort of thing, it really galled you slightly. Plus the fact, I mean, they had the manpower. Where we had 10 men on a Bofors gun, on the equivalent gun that they had, there was about 20 of their fellas manning it. It's a good job we had them like that, mind.
Can we, at this point, just to diverge a little bit, you were moving around a great deal. Were you able to set up your sergeant's messes in the various places?
No, we never had a real sergeant's mess until we got to Great Bounds Camp at Salborough, and we had a regimental sergeant's mess there, and we made a battery sergeant's mess, but we made it in the local pub, the Hare and Hounds. we used to sort of assemble in the back room there. That was our room. But until then, there was no facility whatsoever for setting up a sergeant's mess. You're in with the rest of the troop, and that was it.
When you were at this camp, you said, with the whole regiment that was there, and you set up the regimental sergeant's mess, how did that function?
In what way?
Well, how was it organised? I mean, you obviously had a room for the sergeant's mess.
Well, it was a Nissen hut, actually. It was a Nissen hut. All the camp was Nissen huts, and we had a Nissen hut. And the of course the RSM was president of the sergeant's mess, and we had a bar in. And actually, down there we ate in the sergeant's mess. That was our first experience of doing that. They had a dining room and the and the bar.
And did you have your own cooks?
The sergeant's mess had cooks of their own. Yes.
And did you pay for everything, or was it on some kind of instalment situation? You paid so much a month or a week or what have you?
No, you didn't. You paid a sort of sergeant's mess fee, but I mean that was to cover drinks or anything like. You paid for your drinks, but I mean it was just to, I suppose, cover the little luxuries and things if you were to buy something extra for the meal. But in the meal we didn't have to pay for anything like that.
Did you arrange functions of any kind?
No, we hadn't the facility for. You mean the actual dances or anything? No. No, there was no facility for that even there. I think you had to be in the real big barracks where you could arrange sort of the established barrack blocks and what have you before you could arrange things like that.
And you're still at this point in time, as you're saying, moving around on sites.
Oh yes,
having left
yes.
this camp where the regiment was.
Yes.
And how long did that go on?
Well, really, it went on. It went on until we crossed into France.
When did you realise, or when were you told, that you're actually training for an invasion, although you wouldn't know when?
Well, we knew from Haltwhistle that we were scheduled for that. But of course, up to then, we could have been sent anywhere. We could have been sent to the Middle East or any place like that. But once we got back to Southborough and we became 12th Corps troops, we knew the 12th Corps was destined for... it wasn't actually destined for the first wave. It was the follow-up wave.
How did you feel about, at this point in time, you're probably going to danger and action and...
There was really no feeling of going into danger. I think you just want it's just something you wanted to get on with at the time. I mean, by then we'd been in, well, I'd been away from home 5 years, and you're more or less anxious to get things over with. And of course, the sooner this happened, and the better.
Were you training on getting on enough landing craft? Would that come into your training?
Well, it did. We did a couple of exercises while we're at Southborough, going onto landing craft. We normally used to go into the Thames estuary for that sort of thing. And I remember one time we got on guns and everything loaded on these landing craft. And somebody came along where they'd gone from and said, this isn't a training exercise, we're off. But it wasn't.
I must admit, the hard leap when you...
Oh, yes. Well, I mean, it did at that particular time. Because, I mean, when subsequently it did happen, well, we knew it was going to happen, and that was it. But in this time, we're getting us on here, we're not going to get off again until we get across the road.
What particular craft would carry your guns?
It was the bigger type of landing craft, not the infantry landing craft, not the small one. As it happened, we went on an American Liberty ship. It wasn't a landing craft at all. But we did practice going on the landing craft. We also again practiced more on the scrambling nets and this sort of thing.
Did you have any training on ground shooting?
Oh yes.
An element of it.
Oh yes, ground shooting and anti-tank shooting.
And was that a different shell or?
No, well, the anti-tank shell was. It was an armour-piercing shell. It was a solid shell.
Was the Beaufort a good weapon for anti-tank?
It was a reasonable weapon. It couldn't penetrate the really heavy armour, but it could do a bit of damage if it hit tracks or anything like that.
And was it mainly tank targets or other targets on ground shooting?
We used to shoot, when we eventually landed in France, we used to do quite a lot of shooting at German artillery batteries and mortar sites or infantry concentrations, because you could put quite a concentrated fire down from the... We became quite expert at that. We became expert at getting in, firing, and doubly expert in getting out, and the infantry used to hate us for it, because obviously you got the retaliation, you got the mortar shells coming back.